From the Church of the Nazarene and Mesoamerica Genesis, you're listening to the Worthless Servants Podcast.
Welcome to episode 8 of the Worthless Servants Podcast. I am Scott Armstrong, but I also have several worthless servants here. I'm going to go the opposite direction this time.
All
right. Right to my left. Wait, right to my left? To my left, I have Emily Armstrong.
Hey, guys. What's up?
I also have Chelsea Fry.
Buenas noches.
I have Freya Galindo.
Hi there.
And AJ Fry is to my right.
Hello.
This is outstanding already. We decided to continue our discussion from the previous episode because there was so much to talk about. What is the church? This is people write their doctoral theses on these. But we're going to try to at least give two episodes to this big, big topic. This time, we're going to actually talk about what the Board of General Superintendents in 2014 issued as a definition of a church. And AJ, I think you're going to help us, right?
Yeah. It says that any group that meets regularly for spiritual nurture, worship, or instruction at an announced time and place with an identified leader and aligned with the message and mission of the Church of the Nazarene can be recognized as a church and reported as such for district and general church statistics.
Okay, so we talked about church in the last episode as missional, as in action, not just the church building. We even took the challenge of not saying we're going to church or where is your church, if you're speaking of the church building at least. But now here we are given a definition that's pretty open. So the first part, as we unpack this, is any group that meets regularly for spiritual nurture, worship, or instruction. So let's think about that one first. Anything that grabs your attention there?
It doesn't mention age of the group. Okay. And that's important because sometimes as Christians, we think that the church is only adults. Mm-hmm. And we see the youth and the children as the church of the future. Mm-hmm. And we're not the church of the future. We're the church already. Mm-hmm. The children, the youth, we're the church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important as we start to look at what's going on in Genesis, we see in the urban church plants that the majority of people that are responding to the gospel in the urban center and the plants that we currently have going on are children. Mm-hmm. And so as you start to say, we are planting church, and then 75% of your congregation is 14 years or younger, mm-hmm. like you have to start looking at, okay, well, what does this mean for my church? Or like, I'm going to throw in the big theological word here, my ecclesiology. What do I have this belief about what the church is? And it has to be inclusive of all ages.
Yeah.
Because we have thriving churches that are made up of children and youth, not just adults.
This discussion actually reminds me of a church that we worked with in Guatemala when we lived there several years ago. I remember when we were going to do an outreach activity, and I went to the first service, and all I saw around me were people under 14 years of age. Mm-hmm. There were three adults. I think you remember this too. And afterwards I said, okay, so normally we have someone that's involved, like in charge of the evangelism, but I'm not sure who's going to do that. I mean, woe is me, right? I said, I'm not sure who's going to do that. And normally we have someone that's involved in like a children's outreach, but I don't really know who's going to be able to do that. And I kept on saying a few things, and the pastor eventually stopped me, and he said, well, we've got plenty of people. And I said, yeah, but I don't see many leaders. And he said, what are you talking about? I've got the most energetic church that you'll ever find. I have 40 kids under 11 years old, and I've got 20 more between 11 and 14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he said, no, we're going to do puppets, but you know who's going to do it? My 10 and 11-year-olds. And we're going to serve in this, you know, just picking up trash. But who's going to do it? Everyone from 5 years old to 14 years old. And who's going to evangelize? Well, we need to train them, but our 12 to 14-year-olds are going to be the ones in charge. Mm-hmm. Wow, this is, I mean, it changed my perspective as a rookie missionary on what the church is.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep unpacking this. any group that meets regularly, but it's not just any club. It says mm-hmm. for spiritual nurture, worship, or instruction. That's pretty important, right? At an announced time and place. So we're coming together with a purpose. Mm-hmm. And that purpose, according to this definition, is threefold. Spiritual nurture, worship, or instruction. Anything jump out of those?
It doesn't say that there needs to be 15 minutes for music. It doesn't say that there needs to be 45 minutes for a sermon. It doesn't say that it needs to be 10 minutes for a special song during the offertory.
Mm-hmm. So we need to add that.
I think it's wrong. We are
in the General Assembly here.
You're saying that our general superintendents have got it all wrong. Then.
And you forgot the time of sharing food together at the beginning.
That's because right. we are
donuts.
Coffee time.
Donuts especially.
It doesn't mention the donut.
Yeah. That's critical for me.
Yes, yes. That's so, we're laughing about this. That's pretty important. Mm-hmm. I like what you're mentioning here.
I think part of this conversation goes to, like, the things that it does include or what we would think it excludes, but it truly does include, because when you start thinking about these group sizes, sometimes we think about a church or an organized church that has certain numbers and, like, what AJ just mentioned of a certain schedule that we're all kind of, you know, clicking into the same environment. But when you start thinking about locations like coffee shops or in parks or times when we meet together, we have a lot of names for them. We call them life groups, or we call them small groups, or we call them community groups, or just these small times when we meet together. Those small meeting places could be churches. They could be small groups of churches that maybe one day could even become a larger church. But more often than not, we have these small groups of people that meet together, but we put another name on them. So maybe according to this definition, we shouldn't be renaming something. We should just name it what it is, and a part of our church is meeting together, or something like that.
Some of this is informal. It sounds informal, but there are some pretty intentional, we use that word often in the past episodes, but there are some intentional things happening here. So we joke that the program doesn't need to always be the same, but we are meeting, and not just meeting and, hey guys, what do you want to do today? Mm-hmm. We are looking to be nurtured spiritually, to worship the living God, and to receive instruction. And it even says at an announced time and place. I want to go to the next phrase. It's very brief. It says, with an identified leader. What do we see there and what do we not see?
I don't see the word pastor.
Interesting.
Which I think is really interesting, because going back just a little bit on what I saw in the first part of it, I think our idea that the church has to be with a certain program, with a certain person up front, and at a certain place, holds a lot of people back from being church planters. Mm-hmm. And that's what I see hope in this first part, is God can call anyone.
Yeah.
And I'm sometimes I have this voice in the back of my head. I don't have any theological training. I didn't grow up in a Nazarene family. I grew up in a Catholic family with very different theological beliefs. And I took a New Testament and Old Testament class, and that's about it. Who am I to be a missionary? And I know that that voice rings true for a lot of people who might be called to plant a church. Mm-hmm. Who am I to be a leader of a congregation that is being taught about God? So I like this because it doesn't put those stipulations on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it doesn't. It just says a leader. Mm-hmm. And kind of to your point, it's not saying you have to be seminary trained. And like, we value education
yes.
in our denomination.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah,
we would never, in fact, part of what we constantly are doing as we're in missionary development is if somebody says, well, I'm getting my schooling, we encourage them to finish their education. And we encourage them to seek more theological education. Mm-hmm. It makes you a better Christian to understand about God more. It's not just if you're going to be a pastor or a missionary. Like, it's good for every lay person to grab as much knowledge about the Bible as they can. It creates creates something within them. But that is not a stipulation for being a leader of a church either. And I think sometimes we struggle with that. And different cultures have different viewpoints on education and leadership. But I think about some of our districts that we have here in the Mesoamerica region, that there's pastors that have never been theologically educated, but they've walked with Christ for years and mm-hmm. years and years, and they have a lot to offer. And they're really wonderful pastors and shepherds, and they understand the Bible. And so I think that's an important piece, because sometimes we think, oh, you can't be a leader of a church or a pastor of a church without having the highest level of education. So it's an important piece of this definition of church for us in the Church of the Nazarene.
There's another component to this that then says, and aligned with the message and mission of the Church of the Nazarene. Does that mean that we don't work with any other denominations and we believe that the only ones in heaven will be Nazarenes? It doesn't mean that, but it does mean that we're not creating generic churches. I think this is a crucial part of it.
Yeah.
Right, we're not just getting a bunch of people together and singing Kumbaya and teaching whatever we want, I think.
What's the more recent Kumbaya? Like, do you remember actually singing Kumbaya?
Not actually, like, in a service.
I think we're probably the last generation that
the campfire
sang.
Generation.
Yeah, yeah. We actually sang it, believe it or not.
You want to give us an example?
No, I don't.
Yeah, yes. No, I think nothing. I could play it on the keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. But I think what you say is true. I mean, we have a focus, and we also are aligned with the message. I like that. Because there's almost that doctrinal component, but I like that it says the mission of the Church of the Nazarene. It's not just, do you believe right? If you want to use, you know, certain words, orthodoxy, but orthopraxy as well. Do we practice also what we preach? That's what it means to be church.
Yeah. When I was trying to decide what denomination to align myself with. I say that in air quotes because that's always an interesting process. But in college, I attended several non-denominational churches, and I loved what they were teaching and what they were doing. But there was also this piece that I could see was missing, and maybe that was because I did have this call to serve in ministry more behind the scenes and more into what is theology and stuff. But I could see this piece that was missing of who are you? Who do you align with? Who do you, who are you accountable to? And I think that's a piece that our denomination does really well. And I'm glad that that's in here. I think that's the piece that this is. It's saying, like, we will identify you as one of our extensions, one of our arms, if you're aligned with us, because we do believe that what we are preaching and teaching is scriptural, and it doesn't mean that other denominations aren't good and holy, but it just means we've researched this and we stand behind it. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to preach it, yeah, we'll stand with you.
Well, and I think if we can get to the point of this being the definition, like the working definition, and I'm sitting across this table looking at three people that are under 30 years old, like, I think more people would embrace this idea of, I could start a church. Hmm. You know, like, I sit and look at Chelsea and Freya and AJ and would just pray that you guys would be like, I could do that. I could be the leader of a group of people at a certain time every week that were coming to know about Jesus. And if we had more people, we have so many young people that are saying, you know what, I'm not sure about how I fit, and I don't know, and feel like the church needs to be something. But, like, if we truly embrace this definition of church, those are the young people that are going to start to say that we are the church, you know, mm-hmm. and we are doing the things, and the things that God has laid on my heart that align with the strategies of the Church of the Nazarene and our doctrines, you start to see, like, the explosion happen finally. And that's what we desire to see, not just like this one church and then maybe another, but, like, we need a movement. We need to see thousands of churches that are planted, and it's by embracing a definition like this that you can start to see that type of movement happen. I don't think if we continue to think of like church as this really structured, organized, you have to have 200 people and you have to have this and da, 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 da. Like, that's really hard to say we're going to have.
That's overwhelming.
Yes. And people are like, no, 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 I can't do that. But if you say, you know what, just get a small group together and start learning about Jesus and walk together, I think there's a lot of people that would say, yeah, I could do that. Or I'm already doing that. Like, what's the point where somebody would say, I'm already doing that. Maybe I should be recognized as a church planter. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that would be amazing.
Yeah, the first option, it's like, how am I going to do that? All the craziness, all these markers, while I pay off my student loans.
Right.
But if you tell me I just need to have a small group in my apartment once a week and we intentionally read scripture together and learn from it, I could do that and have another job. Right. I could do that and pay off my student loans.
Yeah.
I think that's specifically important for when you're talking about planting churches in the urban center, especially, because I think when Freya mentioned that she was part of Genesis planting churches, like, I think my mind automatically goes to, wow, what a huge job that is. Yeah. And yeah, it is. But when we talk about this definition and we're thinking about the urban centers, it seems a lot more possible because there are so many apartment complexes. There are so many people that are going a million miles an hour. This definition, and it's not that we tailor this definition to our lifestyle.
Right.
But this is what we believe church is. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we make it too complicated that it has to be this certain program or has to be this certain way. We have to have a building. Where are we going to get the money to build a building? Where are we going to get the space in a city of 4 million people crammed packed with apartments to build a building, you know? But this makes it seem possible. And it makes it seem possible for anybody, I feel like.
One of the most encouraging things I've heard in this past year is talking with the district superintendent that's in the north of the Dominican Republic, and he's received the Genesis missionaries in Santiago. And he said, I love to see that the missionaries are here and they're starting with the people and not the building. And like, he's been a district superintendent for many, many years. And he's seeing that, man, this is how church multiplies. When you have a focus on people knowing who Jesus Christ is and not in buying property and building a building. And he's seeing like this growth that takes place because the people are the church, because we're embracing this type of definition. We're able to see that type of multiplication and growth happen in a way that he hasn't seen before. And it's exciting to me when God allows that to be something that we're experiencing in Genesis sites, especially.
I think Freya, even as you started Genesis, maybe you were overwhelmed by what is our task at hand. But I think you started to see, this is what we are doing and this is who we are. Do you have any examples of how you kind of started to rethink about what church is?
Yeah, I mean, we had to do it because we didn't have a church building when we got to Almirante. Mm-hmm. So we started to have reunions in the house of the people, and our children's ministry, we had that in the patio of a sister of the church who let us use her house as the church building. Yeah. And we didn't know. I mean, now I realize that it was crazy because we had 40 kids in that small area, but it happened, and that's why it's the church, you know. Mm-hmm. So
That's good. The definition ends and it says all that we've just talked about can be recognized, that entity can be recognized as a church and reported as such for district and general church statistics. Now, that may seem like kind of the add-on, but for me, that's important. For the first time, the church that we were planting, the mother church, asked us before our district assembly for statistics. And that was the first time. Until then, they had thought, well, you're not an organized church or a big church yet, you know, like you're still a daughter church. You're still kind of, you haven't really grown up yet.
Yeah.
And now I think I took it to mean that they're starting to understand the difference in this definition. And they said, no, you're a part of this. We need to report on your membership, on your attendance, on even the financial aspect. And I said, that is what it should be. We can be recognized, even though we don't look like our mother church in a lot of ways. No building. We're kind of interim pastors as missionaries. We're not even named officially as pastors. And there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't look like real church, what people think is real church. But this is recognized as the Church of the Nazarene from our church, that we are a legitimate church.
And our people would say, I'm a part of the Church of the Nazarene mm-hmm. in Pantoja. They would never say, we're not there yet. Like, they see themselves as a part of the Church of the Nazarene Pantoja. So we all need to, once the people start to say, we are this church, then you know that, yes, we've gotten to a point of acknowledging it. And not just saying, well, when you get to this one level of organization or whatever, then you're finally a church. You know, I think in for our church congregation, it is helpful for them to say that the people are the church. They recognize mm-hmm. themselves as the church because we follow so much of this definition. It inherently says we are the church as a people group. And I think that's healthy. I think it's really healthy.
We've unpacked it quite a bit. Would you read it one more time, AJ?
Yeah. Any group that meets regularly for spiritual nurture, worship, or instruction at an announced time and place with an identified leader and aligned with the message and mission of the Church of the Nazarene can be recognized as a church and reported as such for district and general church statistics.
I don't know about you, but I can get behind that definition. That's pretty exciting. Yeah. Well, if you'd like more information about Genesis, about Worthless Servants, we're on all your social media. And also, you can find us at mesoamericagenesis.org. And of course, download our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. I think that's it, guys. We're the Worthless Servants. I'm Scott Armstrong.
I'm AJ Fry.
I'm Freya Galindo.
I'm Chelsea Fry.
And I'm Emily Armstrong.
We'll talk to you next time.
For more information, visit us on Facebook or at mesoamericagenesis.org.